Welcome to Family Life. Your host, Shalima Muhammad, and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. Dr. Nadia Muhammad is participating in community projects and will rejoin us again on October 24th. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellence, where Rod speaks. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. I greet the listening audience in the peace of God. As-salamu alaykum. This week's discussion, presidential election, the crucial importance of voting. This week's guest is Sister Jamia Adams. Sister Jamia was born in 1970 in San Francisco. Jamia and Niece Adams family members were members of the Nation of Islam. Her family and half of her extended family became followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad when they joined Temple 26 in San Francisco's Fillmore District. Jamia, along with several cousins and sisters, began their schooling at Muhammad University, where her uncle David drove the school bus, and her mother, aunts, and uncles made up the ranks of MGT and FLI. When her family left the nation in 1975, they continued studying Al-Islam at home. Jamia went on to receive her undergraduate degree from San Francisco State University in broadcast communication and video production, and a professional writing degree from the University of Southern California.
The young lady who's going to be the guest.
It was in D.C. where Jamia moved in part to work for the first black president. She became reconnected with the Imam Wahidin Muhammad Samak at Masjid Muhammad. From the first day she entered the door, she knew that she was home. Professionally, Jamia has produced educational advocacy and documentary media for the internet, television, radio, and film. Her consulting work went hand in hand with a keen acumen for social and digital media strategy as she advised organizations on how to augment their presence in the digital arena using existing tools, including content management systems, mobile, online advertising, and social media. She began her digital career at CBS Entertainment as a producer and transitioned from there to an outreach director position at Brave New Foundation and Films. Jamia went on to produce web videos and content for diverse communities, from American Muslims to her constituency work at the Democratic National Committee on behalf of President Obama. Jamia led the communications and digital media departments for the NAACP, directing strategy for civil rights and social justice marches.
Oh, you can't go now.
An active spokesperson.
See if they got anything here. Let me just go in.
Organization. Jamia uses her knowledge of production coupled with executive management experience in both the mainstream and digital media to consult advocacy, faith, and policy organizations to improve the lives of working Americans and those who need their cause amplified. Currently, Jamia serves as Chief of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for a Progressive Political Action Committee headquartered in San Francisco and serves as a volunteer for Believers for the Biden-Harris presidential campaign. Welcome, Sister Jamia.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Jamia. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Regarding the African-American voter turnout, here's some interesting research. African American voter turnout was within 1% point of whites in 2008. Those specific numbers, 65.2% compared to 66.1%. And it was actually higher than whites in 2012 at 66.6% compared to 64.1%. In 2016, voter turnout for blacks only dipped to 59.6%. While that number was lower than whites at 65%, it was still higher than Asians at 49.3%, Hispanics at 47.6%. And this was conducted by the Brookings.edu out of Washington, D.C. So, in fact, the African-American voter is conscious. My first question to you, can you elaborate on this a little bit more? There's a stereotype, and then there's a reality. And the reality is we're in the game. We just need to become more consistent. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Thank you so much for asking me, Sister Salima. I think that those numbers, when we talk about those numbers, and you mentioned my association and work for the Democratic Party under the leadership of President Obama, we had a candidate at the top of the ticket who inspired us as a community, as an Ummah, and that drew a lot of voter participation. But this year, you know, the facts are the facts of what the turnout was at that time and who was seated. But right now, we are seeing an increased turnout of early voters. And within that early voting turnout, African Americans are greatly represented. So we are seeing a proportionate increase. And in fact, political and other outlets are saying that we're seeing turnout of early voters at a larger percentage. And within that is African Americans as well, who are taking advantage of early voting polling locations and the ability to vote early to, you know, avoid work schedules and to really get this important decision made in a timely manner and in a convenient manner. So I just want to encourage your listening audience to continue. If you can early vote in person, do so. If you have vote by mail options, do that as well. And I also want to encourage there are many of the community who may not be registered to vote. The registration deadlines still have not passed in many of the states. So make sure that you are registered to vote and that your friends and family are registered as well, because that's the first part of getting our community to turn out and participate.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Sister Jamina, if you would give the listening audience layers of the voting process.
Most definitely. Most definitely. So this is my thing that we should do right now. Today is, what is it, October 2nd, October 3rd. I always forget the days during, it's October 2nd today. And we're about a day and a month from election day. But this really is election season, brothers and sisters. So the first thing that I would encourage people listening to do is to check your voter registration. You can go to vote.org, that's www.vote.org, and check your voter registration. The reason why I say to check your registration is because many community members may have moved. There's also some trickery going on right now, and a lot of states that don't want us to vote are purging voters. And so we want to make sure that our votes have, that our names have not fallen off of the voter registration roll if we are already registered. I want to encourage folks to register to vote, to go to your local library, to go online. You can also check out vote.org to see where you can vote and where you can register to vote in your particular state. I want the listening audience to tell your friends and family to also check their voter registration. It is key. Each state has different rules. Each state is, has a different procedure. So it's key that we are on the voter registration rolls in each state. For instance, I live in Solano County in California, and I have registered to vote by mail. Our governor has, we're in a global pandemic right now. Some of us don't believe that we are, but we are in a global pandemic, so our governor has made accommodations so that everyone can vote safely. So if you are registered to vote in California, you receive a vote-by-mail ballot automatically. It doesn't force you to vote by mail. You can still vote in person, but you have that option safely and early than vote by mail. But each state is different. So, again, I want to encourage your listening audience to go to vote.org to see what the rules are and look that up and be familiar with what the rules are in their particular state. If you can sign up for an absentee ballot or vote by mail in your state, I encourage you to do so. I know we're hearing a lot about the efficacy of our U.S. Postal Office. We have a leader in charge that is bent on undermining one of our greatest institutions. You know, my parents actually met at the post office when they were first hiring African Americans in the 60s. And, it was an amazing institution. But now we have a leader who is, undermining the workers and really not giving them what they need. That said, I still want to encourage those who feel they want to be extra cautious during the pandemic to see what the absentee and vote by mail options are in your state. In some cases, you can drop your ballot off also in a ballot collection center at a county office or a mayor's office. But each state, each county, each precinct is different. So I encourage you to look that up. And the vote.org website will bring you to your Secretary of State website with all of the rules so that you can be familiar exactly with what you need to do in your state. If you can vote in person, please, I encourage you all to, of course, wear a mask and take safety measures and try and distance when you vote. There are early voting locations in some states. I encourage you all to, wear PPE and to properly protect yourself when you're voting by mail or voting in person. And then I also want to make a special appeal to our young people and our vibrant, healthy community members who can work as poll workers and volunteer as poll workers at the precinct on November 3rd. I encourage you all, if you are young and healthy and so inclined, to sign up and be a poll worker. Our former First Lady, Michelle Obama, is having an amazing effort along with celebrities like LeBron James to encourage young people to work as poll workers. And I say that because, again, we're in a global pandemic, and this pandemic, our elders are susceptible to this virus, as we all are, but they are particularly susceptible. And oftentimes during election day, we have our elders working the polls, and they may not be able to do so this year. So let's step up and sign up. I've signed up to be poll worker in my community. I'm very excited about it. And a lot of times in some states, the training and whatnot is online, as it is here in California. If you haven't voted early or by mail, show up and vote for protection, social distance. Do all that you need to do to protect yourself and your family. And then I want you to ask your friends and family to follow this checklist, because it really is the voting, I always say, is the beginning of participatory democracy. But it is the key part, and it's what we're concentrating on at this point. So I just encourage you to go through those and do those things during this election season, because many of us are voting already. So that's why I call this an election season, because from now until November 3rd, many from across the United States of America will be voting. So this is an election season. And this election season is like no other. We are really in the middle of a public health crisis. We have a deficit in the White House. And we have changes that need to be made at local level. And those local candidates who are running are really part and parcel of our everyday lives.
And I just want to go back a few minutes because this is important. We spoke about the USPS action, and you described it as trickery specifically, to slow voting by dismantling automatic voting machines. Gerrymandering is going on. So it is important to review that registration, make sure you're on the list. The midterm elections in some states, Georgia specifically, people dropped off the list a few days before voting was to take place. So please pay close attention to what Sister Jamia is describing here, because there's all sorts of things going on, and we have to be alert and conscious. So thank you very, very much for that thorough explanation. You talked about why this election year is crucial. How do we mobilize our talent to support voting?
Sure. So I think it's a one-to-one conversation. You know, when we have what is called trusted resources. I've been working in communications and political media for over 25 years, and we have what's called trusted sources. So when you think about a commercial or your cousin, who are you going to listen to, or your neighbor, you're more likely to listen to your cousin or your neighbor when it comes to a trusted resource and an advertisement that you're going to see on radio or television. So I encourage us, the first thing that we must do when we are trying to mobilize our community to vote is to have a conversation and to talk to our friends, family, and neighbors about what concerns them and make sure that they are registered, making sure that they are participating, and also encouraging the people to participate at local meetings. During pre-pandemic, I was a commuter. I live in Vallejo, which is about 35 miles north of San Francisco, and would commute into San Francisco to work for the Progressive Political Action Committee that I'm working for. And before that, I was working for another political organization.
Yeah, I got it on.
But I often didn't have time to come home for a couple of months or 7 or 8 when
right
they
there.
Were
he don't
meeting
have to stay
or
on.
When the mayor or city council
just go on
is meeting.
You,
but these meetings, if you live close to your home, are participating and help you understand some of the issues that need to be explained when we're trying to mobilize the vote. Oftentimes, we talk about the top of the ticket. Of course, this year we're in a presidential election. But every year we have elections around the country. And sometimes we're voting for governors, sometimes we're voting for mayors, but we're voting every year. And every year that effort is important because, as you said, there is a pointed effort in making sure that our voices are not heard. With gerrymandering, with changing districts so that our power is diluted, all of those efforts have been spurred by the vote and who we elect into office. So talking about the implications and the ramifications of those leaders that we elect to local, state, and federal office are really key in helping to mobilize the vote. So often we are consumed with our daily lives, taking care of our families, taking care of ourselves, working, going to school, and whatnot, everything that we need to survive in this sometimes challenging world. But it is key that we pay attention to the leaders that we elect to office and that we choose wisely and that we are active participants in this democracy. Because I'll tell you another thing, Sister Selena, our communities are growing stronger and stronger. We are, as a community, as African Americans, are increasing our numbers, and as a part of the larger communities of color, are increasing our numbers as well. And that is the effort that's being pushed back against in this country. And we have to fight against it. And we fight against it by having these one-to-one conversations.
Excellent, excellent, outstanding. Listen, you know, this is a crucial year. At stake, we have many things at stake, although it needs to have improvements. The Affordable Health Care Act is in jeopardy, and especially with pre-existing conditions. Let's talk about some other crucial reasons why it's so important to make a decision to vote this election year.
Sure. Well, you spoke about one of them, and that's the problems that are happening in Georgia. We've got people who are being thrown off the rolls. We had a candidate who was running for governor who was also over the Board of Elections in Georgia, who was doing a lot of things that I thought were illegal, and many other organizations were accusing that candidate of doing illegal things that really thwarted the election and really stopped people from voting, changing voting machines, changing voting locations, throwing people off the roll. That's happened in Georgia. We've had African Americans being thrown off the rolls. We've had people with foreign-sounding names. My name is Jania Adams. Your name is Salima Muhammad. Those names are also included in the foreign-sounding names. So there's an all-out effort to stop communities of color from voting across the country, particularly in the American South and in states that have had government leaders who've made a concerted effort to push back against students, against elderly, against communities of color voting. And that is why we need to really do our due diligence to make sure that the law is followed and that we are paying attention to the mechanisms for voting as far as the voting machines. I think Georgia, during the pandemic, during the primary, wanted to change the machines. And they decided, well, we're going to have to delay our voting date because, of course, the pandemic, and then changing the machine. But those types of things, you know, when you're just about to embark upon an election, is really part and parcel to disenfranchising many registered voters. There's a lot of different efforts that are going about to try and discourage voting. In the United States of America, compared to other Western nations, Australia, other democracies like India, we have the least number of participants as far as the percentage of registered voters, of the percentage of eligible people who can vote, who are 18 years or older and can vote. We have the least amount of participation. And we need to bolster our participation as a community, as a country, so that we can see leadership that truly reflects the needs of the community and the wider population. Because if we had even 90% or 80% of the eligible electorate, the eligible registered voters voting, we would see a wholesale change in leadership, and leadership that truly reflected the needs of the community up and down the ballot.
You know, you speak at some very important points. I want to discuss your involvement in the Obama campaign, but before we do that, to our listening audience, this show is brought to you by New Africa Excellence, Laurent Speaks. Tell us, the listening audience, the process you've gone through to become so involved and become such an important voice in our community. I'm so excited. How did all of this begin for you, Sister Jamia?
Sure, so no problem. I think it was definitely inspired by my parents. You know, they would watch the news and talk about politics constantly. And in my family, you know, television was very restricted. So we would watch the news with our parents. We would watch public television and listen to them discussing it and be able to ask some questions. And from there, you know, living in the community that I saw there were some issues that I wanted to organize around. I participated as a child, as a high school student in student government. I served as a student leader, a senator, and then later ran to be secretary of my class and ran clothing drives here in the Bay Area. Even during the 80s, we had a terrible homeless problem. And I wanted to make an effort and organize my community to help people who needed clothing, who were less fortunate and needed clothing, you know, to do what they needed to do to survive. And so I organized that effort. I did a couple of other organizing efforts and then just continued to watch the news and saw some of the issues that were affecting our communities. Looking at different the HIV AIDS pandemic that happened, and it's continuing to impact our community, educating our community about how to avoid the disease and educating the community about what was being effective as far as the medications that were being used in the community. And as far as the Obama campaign, I saw an effort. I was actually working for Brave New Foundation at the time, and my boss asked me to observe how President Obama, then Senator Obama, was using the internet. You know, my background is in communications and digital media, and Barack Obama at the time, his campaign had this amazing site that really used the internet in ways no other candidate had used the internet via organizing, via social media. They had a lot of organic organizing efforts via Facebook that I was following. And then I attended a rally. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I signed up and attended a rally. And then Senator Obama asked for $5 at the rally. And I thought, you know, I'd never heard a politician ask for $5. They, you know, they have these fancy dinners, $1,500 dinners that I knew my parents didn't attend and no one I knew attended. It was like, I have $5. I like this guy. He has a funny sounding name like me. I'm going to support him. And he seemed honest. You know, he came across in an authentic way. And in California, I didn't know that much about Barack Obama at the time, except for his speech that he had made at the Democratic National Convention when John Kerry was running. But that really inspired me, that and the mechanisms of his website. And then from there, I became a volunteer. I volunteered in the Los Angeles headquarters of Barack Obama's campaign, answering phones and, you know, making calls to voters. I speak Spanish, so I participated in a number of bilingual phone banks, calling voters in other states in Spanish, using a Spanish script. And then from there, I just continued to study. You know, we as Muslims are all about studying and really increasing our knowledge. And that was, you know, 2007, 2008. So really the mechanism for the Internet and digital organizing was just in its infancy stages at that point. And I wanted to know more. So I attended a training, learning more about those efforts. And from there, met some people who were working within the Obama family of digital organizing, and decided, you know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime effort. After Barack Obama won the election, I decided to move to D.C. to pursue an opportunity of working, you know, to bolster his work as president, and eventually became a digital organizer for the Democratic Party, where I was able to manage the constituency pages for Barack Obama, veterans for Barack Obama, women for Barack Obama, African Americans, Latinos for Barack Obama. So I organized all those pages on Facebook and helped to create the content and video content and blogs for our website for similar constituency pages, and just got to travel around the country speaking to people about the president's policies, and then in turn speak to my colleagues at the Democratic Party who were also making efforts via organizing, via fundraising, to really expound upon the policies of the president at the time and how they impacted particular communities, how they impacted the Latino community, how they impacted the African-American community, and where community members could go to access this information. Information is golden. And many times I would talk to my family members and they wouldn't know, how do I go and sign up once the Affordable Care Act was passed? How do I go and sign up for health care? How do I look for those affordable options? What are my rights? What are the new laws? We were in an economic crisis at that time, and the president had put together many efforts for people to stay their homes. I was giving my family members information about how they could go about saving their homes. I was disseminating that same information via our constituency pages so that community members could also understand where to go to get these special loans to stay their homes during that economic crisis. So, you know, being a part of the solution, not just complaining about what's wrong, but really going out there and doing it, was how I became a part of this effort. And starting by volunteering, you know, and then eventually that led to a role. I was lucky enough to have been working while I was volunteering, but you know, those types of efforts sometimes come about through volunteering. So I want to encourage our community members who can volunteer to do so, but also to know that there are paid efforts if you want to become a political organizer as well. And oftentimes they're not looking, you know, I do have a college degree and a master's degree, but oftentimes they're not always looking for people who are traditionally educated. I just worked on the presidential campaign, and we made a concerted effort to hire people who were non-traditionally educated, to hire people who were familiar with community and to speak and organize within their communities. A lot of times they hadn't attended college. So I just want to encourage community members who are listening to you, Sister Salima, today and participating in your program to think about those types of roles, particularly our young people, to pursue those types of roles, because you're able to talk to people, you're able to really explain some of the issues that are important to our communities, and you also have an opportunity to get paid to do this work that can be very gratifying to help our society.
Thank you so much. That was so excellent. And you raised such excellent points. The one I want to speak on right now, specifically in the Obama campaign, you having the option, oh my gosh, I don't have $1,500, but I can certainly afford to donate $5. Sponsor, Murad Muhammad, is passionate about community efforts and community financial efforts. And he's always iterating and speaking, listen, folks, we can donate $1 each and build our communities. So this is important to emphasize and keep in the spirit of proactive organizing. You also mentioned some of the programs that were offered under President Obama, and that was the Home Safe Program. That Home Safe Program initiative is being reintroduced in many states today. But that, brothers and sisters, was initiated by the President Obama's administration. What is the momentum today, and how do we work with the Biden-Harris campaign today? Certainly it's different. It's not as mobilized. And let me make an important point here in Arizona. I haven't received any communication from the Biden-Harris campaign. Let's talk a few minutes how we work around this. You gave some excellent suggestions earlier of how to become mobilized, but we only have 1 month left. How do we experience that same mobility in this campaign to get the job done? A few minutes, please.
Sure, of course. So first and foremost, and I've mentioned this already, we are in a unique situation this election year with the pandemic. The pandemic has put restrictions on the campaign that we haven't seen in the past. That said, we are entering election season. We are entering a GOTV moment when most campaigns are really ratcheting up their efforts. Arizona is a battleground state, with North Carolina, Pennsylvania, all of these, Florida, all these other states. You may not have seen an effort or a call and whatnot, but you're going to see that effort because the Biden-Harris campaign is organizing a number of phone banks and text banks that they're launching, some of which I'm participating in on Sunday. You can go to the website to sign up and volunteer. But as far as participating and hearing from the campaign, I think that the primary effort starts in October. And we're only in the second day of October. So you are going to be inundated with contact from the campaign, and particularly being in the key battleground states. And then I think that I want to also, our community is full of movers and shakers. If you're not hearing from the campaign, you're not hearing from your preferred candidate, reach out. You know, we all have tools available to reach out and see what's happening in our area. I know that with the restrictions of the pandemic, many of the efforts are not on the ground. Many, not only the Biden-Harris campaign, but a lot of other organizing efforts and other down ballot candidates are not organizing and doing door knocking this year because simply, you know, people are just not going to be opening their doors because of the risk during the pandemic. And so the shift has changed to digital organizing and phone and texting. And with that effort, you know, a lot of restrictions are in place. And, you know, we have the opportunity of reaching out to people, but they have to be people who are active registered voters. There's also a lot of effort to reach out to what's called low propensity voters. And those are sometimes voters of color who maybe are not participating in every election. And we know that this is going to be a turnout election. You know, often our last few years, these elections have been decided with a very small margin. And we know that if we get everyone turned out and mobilized, it will go in the direction that we want. And so that effort of mobilizing communities of color, mobilizing low propensity voters and voters who may not be as apt to participate or maybe struggling with the daily vestiges of this economic downturn, you know, like we are, I spoke about in 2008, we were in an economic recession, and many experts are saying we are headed towards another Great Depression, and this economic downturn is we're just at the beginning of it. You know, each month, more and more people are losing their jobs, more and more people are having trouble finding a new job or finding a job that paid as much as their last job. So when you're dealing with daily lives and that struggle, it's difficult to focus on the election and who's running. But I want to encourage the brothers and sisters who are listening today, that is part and parcel of our very survival. Finding out who's running, participating in these elections, making sure that if you've had to move, that your voter registration is up to date and that you are on these rolls. All of these things are really key and part of our everyday survival, even as we endure great challenges this year and probably into the future.
Yes, ma'am. The Biden-Harris platform discussed the strengths of both candidates, Biden and Harris. Please.
Yes, yes, of course. So I think with the vice president, we have a statesman. We have someone who has been in government and really understands both domestic and international policies and the law and the Constitution more so than any leader that we've had, you know, running in the last few years. We also have, with Joe Biden, a candidate who's willing to listen. You know, Joe Biden is considered a moderate Democrat, but this is why I encourage folks who may be more progressive to consider voting for Joe Biden, because Joe Biden has changed some of the policies. He understands that even what he did when he was part of the Obama-Biden administration is not necessarily what we need at this point, at this, during the struggle that we have. I understand from reading about the campaign and learning about the campaign that the Biden-Harris campaign already has a commission of task force people together to fight and come up with the policies that we need to fight back against this global pandemic. We need policies in place that protect our communities. We have Black folks who are dying with this virus at a greater rate than any other group of people. We need that task force to really look at it, look at science, look at the demographics, look at the political impact, and that's what Joe Biden is doing already in preparation for should he be our next president of the United States. As far as Senator Harris is also a moderate Democrat who is willing to look at what the policies are, willing to listen. Many of you have seen her being tough in interviewing our justices and interviewing our witnesses who have really not been doing what they should be doing. And her legal background lets us know she understands the Constitution. Here in California, Senator Harris bought the big banks. Many of these big banks were making terrible loans to communities of color with high interest rates and really just taking advantage of the lack of education of some of it. And she called them out on it and worked together with other attorney generals to really push back against these big banks. I think she'll do that as the vice president, as the head of the Senate. We need a strong leader who understands the law and the Constitution as the head of our Senate. And I think that makes them both viable candidates. But I'm going to tell you the thing that, and I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again, the thing that I think makes them both the strongest candidate is that they are willing to listen. They're willing to understand that they may not have made all the right decisions in the past, and that they're going to look and listen to advocacy groups, to community members, and try and develop policies that will work for this time and for a larger community, and really hear that pushback and criticism in a way that our current president is not listening to. We need leaders who will listen to us and to push back against some community members who are saying, well, these candidates are not representing our community and they haven't always sided with us. They have not done everything perfectly, but they're really making a concerted effort. For instance, you spoke about my volunteer efforts with Believers for Biden. There is a number of Muslims who are organizing, Muslims of all stripes, of all colors, who are organizing and helping the Biden campaign reach out to other Muslims. A real concerted effort to reach out to our diverse communities, because we are Muslim, we are as African Americans, we are from the islands, we are so incredibly different. We have cousins who are Christian, we have cousins who are Jehovah's Witness, we have cousins who are Muslims, and they are recognizing that we are not a monolith and making those efforts to reach out to our different communities, our African diaspora of African immigrants who have come in from different countries and are also Muslim as well. They understand that we need to make a concerted effort, because when you are a leader, you're not just a leader to one people. We as Americans are very different. We as Muslims are very different. And the Biden-Harris campaign is really making an effort to reach out to these various communities in a way that I haven't seen before. And I really appreciate and respect that effort. And for that, you know, I'm supporting them.
We talked earlier, and you mentioned specifically other elections and how they're important. And I'm going to mention here midterm elections specifically as it organizes Congress. Congress is in a very crucial point right now. So there's this big debate going on in the country with the passing Justice Ginsburg. You know, traditionally, the elected president would, you know, place or replace that justice. And now this administration is trying to do it ahead of time. But Allah, of course, is the best of planners. How crucial is the Supreme Court justice replacement?
Sure. Happy to talk about that. You know, we are, like I mentioned in the beginning, 30 days and a day from Election Day. During President Obama's presidency, he had 9 months until Election Day and was not allowed by the Senate to confirm a justice.
That's right.
You know, so when we're 30 days out, and the American people, I've read many, many polling that says that the American people overwhelmingly believe that the winner from the November 3rd election should choose the next justice. And I'll tell you why the Supreme Court is so key to this election. The Supreme Court decided who the president would be in the year 2000. We had a contentious election between Al Gore and George Bush. Al Gore actually won the popular vote. He won the popular vote, but it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decided that George Bush would be our president. And so our current occupant of the White House understands how key the Supreme Court is in a close election. All the numbers are indicating that this will be a close election because, as I said before, all of our last elections have been very short and have been very close, and the margins have been very small. First Lady Michelle Obama also spoke about the number of voters who decided the presidential election in Michigan and in Pennsylvania. You know, these votes are very small numbers. And so we could also enter a state where the Supreme Court would decide on who the winner would be if any of the campaigns would sue or decide that there was not enough of a margin of victory to declare a winner. And with an overwhelming number of conservative judges, they could decide for the current occupant. And so this is why the Supreme Court is key. But we have to continue pushing, because if this nominee is confirmed before November 3rd, or even, you know, we're talking and focusing on November 3rd, but we have this current president until late January. And so he could confirm, he said it the other day, that he could confirm after the election. So there is time for him to make this confirmation. But there is an option, if the vice president wins, that they could increase the number of the Supreme Court. And so that would help with some of the decisions, not just the presidency, because, you know, of course, that would be after the election, but some of the other key rulings. You talked about the Affordable Care Act. We have a leader who is trying to take away health care for Americans and trying to chip away at this law. Also, we have a leader that's trying to take away our vote and really not switching back when states make laws that disenfranchise voters. All of that is impacted by the Supreme Court. Those nine justices, right now we have eight with the death of the Senate passing of Justice Ruth Ginsburg, they're key. They're really key. And I, for one, believe in expanding the court. I think that, you know, at this point, we need a larger court we really need folks who believe in the Constitution and the law.
Excellent.
And I think that is how we can, hopefully, with a Joe Biden presidency, expand the court and build a court that adheres to the law. You know, I'm not talking about partisan politics. I mean, I am talking about partisan politics, when I think about the Supreme Court, I think about justices who abide by the law and justices who read and believe in the Constitution and understand the history of this country, and that we won't always do the right thing. We had slavery codified into our law. We had many things. We had the internment of the Japanese codified into our laws. So really understanding that we need to have laws that protect people, and we have to have the option that if we do have terrible laws that are working to destroy communities and people, that we can overturn these laws.
But I think you bring up an important point. Let me just interject here, because you are making some very important points, and that justice, brothers and sisters, are going to determine the reversal. Let's take our time here. The reversal of federal laws in place to protect the people's rights and handing them back over to the state. That just brings up Jim Crow all over again. So this is important.
Yes.
How we organize Congress is important. So we do have some Muslims entering Congress. We have Ilhan Omar, the senator out of New York. This is really important to follow as Congress is the support of any presidency. What do we say?
Okay, baby boy.
Young people
ready
and elders alike who just do not trust the process. And even if you don't trust the process, why is their one vote still important?
Sure. So, you know, you spoke about Sister Ilhan Omar from the great state of Minnesota. We appreciate her. We have many great leaders. Andre Carson representing the great state of, why am I forgetting what state he is? Indiana, Indianapolis, Indiana. And Congress is key to many of the laws and many of the decisions that are made daily. So, and they are elected every 2 years. So we're always voting for congressional seats. We're always, you know, making those efforts. And if we have a Democratic president or if we have a progressive president that we believe in, but he doesn't have the Congress support, then he's not able to get laws through that will benefit the community. So those votes count, whether, you know, that one little vote. Many of these decisions are decided by a few votes in each precinct. That's your one vote, and it's key that we participate. It's also key, I want to say, too, in the turn we have left, so key that we run for office. You know, you spoke about Congressman AOC from New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She was a young woman who worked in Congress, but she also worked at a restaurant, and she decided, you know what, I'm seeing a need in my community. I'm going to run against a Democrat. And she won. And she is a pivotal up-and-coming leader within the community, along with Sister Ilhan Omar and others, Lauren Underwood and other leaders that are coming up and running for office. We have leaders who have run for office and then they may not have won their office. The congresswoman in Missouri, she ran with AOC and Sister Ilhan Omar, and she lost, but then she ran again and she won. And so it's key that we continue to push our supporters, that we give $1 if we can, that we give $5 if we can, that we run for office, that we vote, that we register, we check all of our voter registration, and do the things that we need to do to participate in this democracy, because we can change our local communities, our states, and federal governments, and have a real impact in these decisions.
Yes, Rashida Party Tlaib also, another sister who ran
Michigan
and won it out of Michigan. Yes, ma'am. So we are getting involved. So it is an exciting time. It is important for us to be involved.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And I just want to give a shout-out to Congressman Rashida Tlaib, who I actually helped to organize a fundraiser for her in D.C. when she was a state representative in Michigan. So, you know, I want to also encourage the brothers and sisters out there listening to do that as well. I also did a help with some sisters to do a fundraiser for then-Attorney General Kamala Harris for her first race for Attorney General in California. So you can be a part of this system by doing these small dollar fundraisers as well. And so the candidates really appreciate that, and they remember you, and you can tell them what issues are important to your community. So participate.
I have a smile on my face. This has been such a treat and so informative. You know, question on the minds of the people of this nation. You have addressed, and I know it has made a significant difference in their understanding. So we thank you. We look forward, Sister Jamia, to working with you in the future. I
thank
want
you.
To take a moment, because we are living in different times today. We are in a global pandemic. So prayers to the families who have lost loved ones. Allah is our strength. And if we keep moving in His path, we are assured His protection. I would also like to extend families who are affected by the fires in California and other devastation that's occurring in the country from weather. Next time you're on, we'll talk about the exchanges of global warming. I think that's a very important subject. To get that understanding to that would be exceptional.
Yes.
Thank you so much to the listening audience. Sister Jamia reminds me of my spirit, and we connected immediately. And she took time out of her busy schedule to be with us today, and I humbly thank you for joining us. Just
thank you so much.
You're welcome. If you would please provide contact information for the listening audience should they have future questions, we would so appreciate it.
Yes, most definitely, Mrs. William. I just want to thank you. I want to thank Brother Murad for sponsoring this important community radio show, and also thank Sister Fitra, the producer of Study Al-Islam, for making the introduction and for doing the work and important work that she does in the Ummah. I invite all the brothers and sisters to follow me via Twitter. My handle is Jamia Adams. That's J-A, M as in Mary, I-A-H, as in hat, A, D as in dog, A, M as in Mary, S as in Sam. Jamia Adams on Twitter, or you can always follow me via LinkedIn. My name is also Jamia Adams on LinkedIn, or on Instagram. A lot of the younger brothers and sisters are on Instagram. I am on Instagram. under my first and middle name, and that's Jamia Anise. Jamia, J-A-M-I-A-H, Anise, A-N-I-E-C-E. Not a nephew, but Anise. So I just want to thank your audience for listening. I want to encourage the brothers and sisters to encourage your family members to vote. Register to vote. It's still not too late. And to consider all of the things that Sister Selena and I spoke about and continue listening to this amazing radio program. Thank you so much, Sister Selena.
Thank you. To the listening audience, again, this program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent in Law and Speech. Thank you for joining us today, and have a blessed day. Assalamu alaikum.